At the beginning of Parshas Vayichi, that's Perek Mem Zayin, on page 118 in your blue Chumashim, the Torah testifies that Yaakov lived in Mitzrayim for 17 years. So he overlapped in close proximity with his son Yosef the last 17 years of his life in Mitzrayim. And then in Pasuk Chof Tes, Vayikrivu Yimei Yisrael Lamus. Now, at the very end of Parshas Vayigash, the Torah tells us, Vayeshev Yisrael Be'eretz Mitzrayim, etc. And l'chaor at the face of it, there's no connection here between Vayeshev Yisrael Be'eretz Mitzrayim and Vayikruvu Yimei Yisrael Lamus. The only connection is that they're contiguous in the Torah and they both refer to Yisrael. Vayeshev Yisrael and Vayikruvu Yimei Yisrael. However, to our surprise, Rabbi Yochanan in Masechta Sanhedrin in Perek HaChelek Daf Kuf Vav makes a connection between the two. And what Rabbi Yochanan is going to do for us is he's going to do a word search, so to speak, for the word Vayeshev throughout Tanakh. And he's going to bring a whole list of psukim where the Torah utilizes that word Vayeshev. Would I be able to trouble you just to close the door, if you don't mind? Ooh, watch yourself. Okay. Thank you so much. And in all cases that he quotes, Rabbi Yochanan says the word Vayeshev introduces some bad tragedy that's going to happen, something evil. So you could say the word Vayeshev sort of foretells evil. Now it's a very kind of strange application here in our case. In the other cases, Bezer Hashem will work through them. But here, it's hard to say that the last Vayeshev in Parshas Vayigash should in any way be indicative of some sort of, or foretell some sort of tragedy, because on the contrary, it would seem that this Vayeshev is the culmination of the tragedy of Mechiras Yosef. And finally what happens is that Klal Yisrael settled down in Mitzrayim. And of course, Yosef is going to support them and sustain them. So you wonder offhand, what's the connection between the Vayeshev of the culmination of Bechiras Yosef and the Vayeshev and the Vayikrivu Yimei Yisrael Lamus? So he writes that when the drama of Yosef and his brothers comes to a conclusion, it would seem, you know, it's a good end to a story. What do they say? A story ends on a good note. How do you say it?
Happy ending.
Happy ending. Oh, a happy ending. But yet, immediately after this happy ending is the death of Yaakov. And offhand, you would say that there were 17 years that separated those two events. The happy ending, the settling of Yisrael in Eretz Goshen and Mitzrayim, and then the death of Yaakov. But Rabbi Yochanan makes this connection. So what does Rabbi Yochanan say? Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Kol makom shenemar vayeshev, eino elo lashon tsar. If you want to underline those words, it's line 7 in the second paragraph. Shenemar. Now, how do I prove, says Rabbi Yochanan, that the lashon of vayeshev is a lashon tsar? So first he tells you to look in Bamidbar Perek Chof Hei, and you remember that at the end of Parshas Bullock, Bilam has this idea of sending the Benos Moav to have this immoral relationship with the sons of Israel. You remember that? So we could read the pasuk here. I think it's on page 402 in your Chumashim. Let's see if I'm right. Yeah, Vayeshev Yisrael Beshitim. And immediately after that Vayeshev comes Vayochel Ha'am Liznos Esbnos Moav, which is going to culminate in the destruction of so many thousands of Jewish people. And then he quotes the pasuk back in the beginning of Parshas Vayeshev, which you'll see.
Why doesn't he quote these in order of the Chumash?
I think he's quoting it in order of the more obvious ones, and then the less, the more sophisticated ones. So the most obvious one is this very pasuk in Bamidbar Chafei, where you see the Tsar immediately after the Vayeshev. In the case of Parshas Vayeshev, which is on page 89,
it's also pretty obvious.
Well, take a look. I mean, again, Vayeshev Yaakov Eretz Megurei Aviv Be'eretz Kanan, Eli Toldos Yaakov, and then it goes on to say some beautiful things about Yosef, where the Ramban, you know, waxes very dramatic here that Yosef is a student, he's the disciple, he's the chosen one. And he's the beloved and so forth and so on. But the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Rabbi Yochanan in Sanhedrin, focuses on the words Vayove Yosef Dibasam Ra El Avihem, and that's pretty close to the Vayeshev. Again, it's separated, but not that separated. So the Dibasam Ra is the trigger for the Mechiras Yosef, for the Sina amongst the brothers. Then he quotes a third example, which is our parsha, and that's the most difficult one, I think. Where does the Vayeshev Yisrael Beretz Goshen, as the culmination of the trauma of the Mechiras Yosef, why is that lead up to Tsar? He doesn't explain it. And then he has another pasuk in Tanakh. This is a very famous pasuk. Ish tachas gafno, ish tachas te'eno. So it means they reach that level of calm and security, tranquility. And then, if you fast forward by about seven psukim, the Torah tells us, Vayokam Hashem satan lishlomo es hadod hadomi mizera melech shehu be'edom. And then there's going to be a confrontation between Edom and Shlomo HaMelech. But once again, it doesn't seem in that case to be a Vayeshev, that the Vayeshev is something negative or something indicative of Tzar. In any event, getting back to our parasha, what is Vayikrevu Yemei Yaakov Lamus, what does that mean in terms of Vayeshev? And in order to explain this, he says that let's use the parashin Vayeshev as a kind of paradigm. Because there Chazal say, Vayeshev Yaakov Beretz Megurei Aviv, Rashi quotes it in his Pirush al Torah, Bikesh Yaakov Leshev B'Shalva. That the word Leshev is indicative of the fact that Yaakov finally reached a station in his life where he wanted to say, die, you know, enough of all these tzaras, you know, let me settle in some warm climate somewhere and take life easy. You know, Bikesh Yaakov Leishei B'Shalva. Most of us are dreaming of retirement, right? It's not a bad thing. But no, Chazal say, Kofetz Olav, Rigzo shall Yosef, excuse me, which means that there's going to be a terrible tragedy that's going to follow the Vayeshev, the Bikesh Yaakov, Leshev B'Shalva. So what does the word yeshiva mean? What is, obviously Rabbi Yochanan sees in the word Vayeshev and yeshiva something more than what we see. It's not just physically sitting down. But he says that yeshiva is something that is antithetical to the essence of man. Obviously there are times that we have to physically sit down, but the concept, the symbolic metaphysical concept of yeshiva which makes a person stationary in a place. You know, he reaches a station and he sits down. That's really antithetical, according to Rabbi Yochanan, of what a Jew should be all about. For example, we find that with regard to the Malachim, they are called in Tanakh Omdim, which means they stand in their place. Man is called upon to be a holich, to be in motion. And for a human being, he could be either an omed or it could be a yoshev, but either way, he's stationary and stuck in his place. And that's called tficha atzmit al ashechem. So if you're looking on the first page, it's about 8 lines up from the bottom of the page, in a paragraph that starts omnom. And on the second line, if you want to underline those 4 words, tficha atzmis al ashechem, which means to give yourself a pat on the back. When does a person give themselves a pat on the back? When they feel that what? A sense of accomplishment. Now you would say, well, what's wrong with that? A person should feel a sense of accomplishment. Correct? But it all depends on what that pat on the back is. If a person pats himself on the back and he's willing to say, okay, let's take the first case, which is the better case, and then we'll get to your case, Joel. If he's willing to say, okay, I reached this station in life, but I don't have time to linger on this, you know, I want to move on. So yesterday I spoke 8 times in Modi'in. So, you know, I could say to myself, wow, after 8 lectures in one Shabbos, you know, I should take a little break, right? Go fly to Eilat or something. I don't know. How's the weather in Eilat these days? I have no idea. You know, how's the situation with restaurants there? Any Mahajan restaurants there? Anyway, but you know, to come back a few hours later and say, well, let's give a Chumash class, you know, because 5 gentlemen wanted to come to the class, you know, that's one kind of pat on the back. But then there's a pat on the back where a person says, you know, I'm ready to retire, to throw in the towel. I've done enough. I'm an alta yid, you know, magili, you know. So that, he says, is antithetical to what a human being is all about. And Rabbi Yochanan is going to emphasize that we need what's called hitkadmut. Hitkadmut. That's the title of this essay, is Hashi'ifa lehitkadem. She'ifa means to have expectations of oneself. She'ifa. You know, to not be satisfied with oneself and say, well, I got to this point, genug, that's enough. No, to keep moving on and on and on. Now, we have a Kabbalah that there's a fundamental difference between the 2 different parts of Shas. One is called Halacha and the other is called Agadata, Agada. In Halacha, as a general rule, when the Gemara quotes a certain Amora and the Amora makes a halachic statement, we're not going to necessarily study the life history, the biography of that Chacham to figure out why he said what he said. Meaning, there doesn't have to be any connection between the upbringing or the personality of the Chacham who made the statement and the statement itself. So, if Abai says that Yeish Shalom Midas, Lo Avi Yeish, I don't have to know, you know, a whole history of Abai. You know, I don't have to read his biography. But in Agadata, more often than not, if the agadic statement is something that reflects on a hashkafas olam, on a Weltanschauung, that hashkafas olam, which is embodied in the statement of the Amora, reflects the nature or the upbringing, the biography of that Amora. So which Amora, if we can call him by name, was the one who discovered the key code, the secret of the code word Vayeshev, of Yeshiva? Rabbi Yochanan. So what we're going to do now is we're going to try to study the biography of Rabbi Yochanan, and based on that biography, come to some at least suggested conclusion as to why he was the one who discovered that Vayeshev is a Lashon Tzar.
He was very rich. Is he the one who was very rich?
He was rich and poor. And we'll explain as we go along. Okay then? So number one, what's the first thing that we know about Rabbi Yochanan? Okay? And the answer is that Rabbi Yochanan is considered the greatest Amora of his generation, to such an extent that in the Gemara in Zvachim, Tosfos raises the possibility that Rabbi Yochanan is a Tana, not an Amora, and he can argue against the Mishnah. That's how great he was. But let's go back to the early childhood of Rabbi Yochanan, and let's think about how he reached that level, that apex of being a Tana, even though he was in the generation of Amoraim. How many, I don't know if I can say it that way, how many parents did he have? That's a funny statement, right?
About two.
Yeah, he had zero, actually. Zero parents. Why? Because his mother died at childbirth, and his father died while he was an embryo. Now, when you have a yosom, an orphan, usually it means yosom in a av, or yosom in a eim. In the case of Rabbi Yochanan, he was a double yosom, what we call a yosom kfula, that means he had no parents whatsoever. Like, I remember when my mother passed away, this is way after my father passed away, so my wife and I were sitting in the Kenyon in Malcha, in the food court, if anybody knows where that is, and a person came by, a man of about 40 or so, and he put out his hand and he said, "Ani yatom, I'm an orphan." So my wife turns to me and points to me and says to the man, "Gam bali yatom." And then it all of a sudden occurred to me that I'm an orphan. Like, it didn't click, you know. Rabbi Yochanan was born an orphan. Could you imagine the psychological impact on a child who's raised without parents? And yet, this is the Rabbi Yochanan who made the famous statement in the Gemara in Kiddushin, to try to find the light at the end of the tunnel here, try to find the, what do they call it, the honey in the...
The good news.
Yeah, the good news and the bad news. But they used to have a phrase, like the honey in the bitter part, that... You know, if you're born without parents, you could never be punished for violating Kibud Av V'Em. Kibud Av V'Em is such a demanding mitzvah, it's almost impossible not, you know, to live up to the standards of Kibud Av V'Em. Most people, when they go down to the grave, they go down to the grave with tremendous guilt of what they did to their parents in their youth. You know, how often were they disrespectful for their parents? Rabbi Yochanan says, "I don't have that issue, because I was born without parents."
Better than the sweet.
To the bitter of the sweet, well, the sweet of the bitter. Now, let's think about Rabbi Yochanan. Was he rich or was he poor? That's what Michael was asking. So the Gemara tells us the following story, that Rabbi Yochanan was walking with his colleague Rabbi Chiya. Rabbi Chiya, in fact, was a Tana. And they were passing fields and vineyards. And every time they passed a field or a vineyard, Rabbi Yochanan would say to Rabbi Chiya, "That was mine, but I sold it." Until they finally got at the end of the road to the very last vineyard, and again Rabbi Yochanan said, "That was mine, but I sold it." And at that point, Rabbi Chiya broke out in tears. He was so upset about the fact that Rabbi Yochanan had to sell all his possessions and left nothing for his old age. You know, people leave some money for security for their old age, right? You know, they give a lot away to their children and hopefully to tzedaka, but they leave something, you know, what do they call it, a nest, a little bit of a...
A nest egg,
you know, for the old age. Rabbi Yochanan had no nest egg. He was absolutely poor. And Rabbi Chiya, when he found out about this, he was upset. He was broken up. So Rabbi Yochanan comes to console Rabbi Chiya, to explain to him why I sold all these fields and all these vineyards. He says, "Kala hibe nechamash asisi, do you not appreciate the significance and why I was so motivated to sell everything? Macharti davar shenitan l'sheshes l'shisha yomim. I was selling things that were created during the 6 days of creation, but kanisi something, I bought with that money 40 days of Har Sinai." You know, the Torah, Moshe Rabbeinu went up to the half of Har Sinai. "Olam kulo umaloa lo nivra." The world was created in 6 days, but it was created for one day, for the purpose of one day, the sixth day of Sivan, which was the day in which the Torah was given after 40 days on the mountain. So Rabbi Yochanan sees the positive. True, I'm not a wealthy man, but I gave up all that money so I could dedicate myself to the study of Torah. And then we get to the Gemara in Brachos. This is beyond comprehension. I don't explain. I don't claim to explain to understand this Gemara. The Gemara says that Rabbi Yochanan buried 10 sons, and the Gemara describes the death of his 10th son, which I can't even say it to you. You look in the Gemara in Brachos. The whole body was completely destroyed, and what was left of the body was one little bone, or some say it was a tooth. And Rabbi Yochanan grabbed onto that bone, and whenever he went to be Menachem Avelim, he would show that bone. Look what I went through. And the tragic story of Rabbi Yochanan's life gets even more complicated when he loses his Talmud, Reish Lakish. And this is going to ultimately bring about the death of Rabbi Yochanan. What happened was, let's go earlier, before we get to Rabbi Yochanan, to Reish Lakish. The Gemara Bava Kama tells us that there was a confrontation between Rabbi Yochanan and Rav Kahana, in which Rabbi Yochanan suspected Rav Kahana of embarrassing him, of insulting him. And as a result, that Rabbi Yochanan thought Rav Kahana was being malagleg and sochek olav, he was makbid on him, he was very upset with him, and Rav Kahana died. Shortly after his death, Rabbi Yochanan realized that he had made a big mistake, that Rav Kahana was falsely judged. So Rabbi Yochanan finds himself at the cemetery, the burial plot of Rav Kahana, and guess what he does? Tchias HaMeisim. And he brings Rav Kahana back to life. Says the Shita Mekubetzes, how did Rabbi Yochanan attain this madrega of Tchias HaMeisim? And the Shita Mekubetzes says, because his whole life he was one long chain of simcha gedola. He was always in a state of joy, despite all the tragedies in his life. And that gave him the possibility of being Mechayim Meisim. Again, I'm not saying that, suggesting any of us could be Mechayim Meisim, but here's the recipe. Then the Gemara in Bav Metzia says that Rabbi Yochanan mistakenly accused Reish Lakish of saying something insulting to him about the fact that maybe he should have, it was Rabbi Yochanan was Makari for Reish Lakish, so maybe he should have stayed a robber, and so on and so on. So Rabbi Yochanan was makbid on Reish Lakish, and Reish Lakish died. As a result of this whole story, the Gemara says that the Chachamim tried to console Rabbi Yochanan after the death of his Talmud Reish Lakish. They brought Rabbi Lozman and Pidas, and he would ask, and he would bring 24 proofs to everything Rabbi Yochanan said, and they expected Rabbi Yochanan to be elated, and Rabbi Yochanan was depressed. He said, give me Reish Lakish, you used to ask me 24 kashas on my shiur. So at the end of this whole story, the Chachamim prayed, and Rabbi Yochanan died. So the famous Kotzke Rebbe asked the kasha, well, in the case of Rav Kahana, what did Rabbi Yochanan do? He was Mechay Mason. Why can he do the same for Reish Lakish? Why couldn't he be Mechayim Meisim? Why do they have to pray for the death of Rabbi Yochanan? The answer is because when Rav Kahana died, Rabbi Yochanan was experiencing a temporary kind of anguish. And he was still basically in the state overall of Simcha. He still had the power of Tchias HaMeisim, as we saw in the Shita Mekubetzes. Not so when he lost his Talmud, Reish Lakish. At that point, Rabbi Yochanan lost it as far as Simcha is concerned. He could no longer be B'Simcha. He now entered into a state which is antithetical to Simcha. Imagine the same Rabbi Yochanan, who was able to face all the challenges of his life, the loss of 10 of his sons, the loss of all his possessions, and all the difficulties of being born as a double Yosel. And yet, when he loses Reish Lakish, that's it. There's no longer a chance for Rabbi Yochanan to achieve Simcha. And therefore he can't be Mechayim Meisim. Why? The answer is because the very essence of the personality of Rabbi Yochanan is a Mahalach. What is a Mahalach? Mahalach is a person who has She'ifot. He looks forward with aspirations to reach the next level. His excitement in life is based on the fact that he never stops, he never takes a break, he never reaches a station in life where he pats himself on the back. That's not Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan, despite all the barriers, is going to overcome these barriers. All the challenges, he's going to face these challenges. But there's one challenge that he can't face, and that's the loss of his Talmud. Because Reish Lakish would ask him 24 kashas on the Shia. And that meant that Reish Lakish would force Rabbi Yochanan to think and rethink, to delve, and to plummet the depths of the Torah and come up with new insights. And therefore, Rabbi Yochanan felt at that moment in his life he was no longer a mahalik. In the absence of Reish Lakish, he went into a state of depression. And he could no longer be motivated by that which defined his very essence. To read to you the paragraph at the end of 169, about three lines down, he says, Ach Rabbi Yochanan nolad litoch matzav koder. Koder means difficulties in life. Chayav hayush zurim b'mikrim marim. His life was a chain, an unbroken chain of bitterness. And yet he achieved simchas achayim. Why? What's the basis that projects Rabbi Yochanan to simchas achayim? It's the spiritual element in life. He's not interested in physicality and materiality, becoming rich. He has an unsatiable desire for chayei ruach, for the life of spirituality, to understand Hashem, to come close to Hashem. He never has complaints against the creator of the world. He understands that despite all the tragedies that befall him, he's going to continue a life of asiya, of flourishing, of continue to work, to dedicate all his energies. And he understood that if he would stop asiya for one moment in life, he would terminate his asiya. That means churban, that means totally destruction. And finally, Rabbi Yochanan hit that brick wall where he couldn't move forward anymore. And that was the death of Reish Lakish. At that point, he was frozen in anguish, in depression. He was no longer the oseh, he was no longer the mahalik. And Rabbi Shlomo Kluger, on the bottom, moving over to the top of the next page, asks, why did the Chachom have to pray for Rabbi Yochanan that he would die? Why couldn't they pray for his health, that he should be restored to health? And the answer is that since Rabbi Yochanan no longer had the power of Tchias HaMesim, and the death of Reish Lakish was final, was irreversible, therefore, even if they would pray that Rabbi Yochanan would have a respite, and he returned to mental, psychological health, that would only be a temporary kind of situation. He would never be able to regain his health. If he got healthy, he would get sick again. And Rabbi Yochanan was more connected to Reish Lakish than his 10 sons. Of course he loved his 10 sons that he buried. But nevertheless, he could not achieve what Rabbi Elazar ben Pedas was trying to achieve on behalf of Rabbi Yochanan. I'm going to bring you 24 proofs to establish the veracity of your presentation. No, that would make me into someone who taps myself on the shoulder and feel, wow, I'm great. But that would, in a sense, douse and cool off my motivation of asiyah, that I want to do more and more and climb higher and higher. For that I need Reish Lakish, and I cannot do it without Reish Lakish. And therefore, Rabbi Yochanan's life was at that point shattered to pieces. And if you take a look on the top of page 170, he says, despite the fact that Rabbi Yochanan lost 10 sons, he was able to be menachem other people and bring them nechama, but he himself could not be consoled at all on the loss of Reish Lakish. And now let's go through all the examples of Vayeshev and come back to our Vayeshev. In all the examples of Vayeshev, there's going to be a period of time where a person says, you know what? I've reached the station in life. I can take a break. Let me go on vacation. Let me retire. And what's common to all these Vayeshevs is that attitude, that state of mind. So that Vayikrevu Yemei Yisrael Lamos, and we ask the question, the death of Yaakov here at the beginning of Parashas Vayechi, what does it have to do with Vayeshev? Everybody's going to die at some point. A person will reach the end of his life. The Arachayim HaKadosh says in his Pirush HaLev Torah that everyone in their older years gets to the point where they're body is not functioning the way it used to be. Even Talmidei Chacham will tell you that their mind is not capable of understanding the Torah the way they used to when they were young. And of course, they can continue and push to learn and try to learn with whatever kochos they have, but it's limited. It's going to be a gvul mesuyam, as he calls it. And at a certain stage, the Talmidei Chachamim will begin to regress in their knowledge, in their ability to study Torah, in their ability to analyze and judge the Torah. And the Aruch Chaim says that when Yaakov reached that level, and it was a little bit premature in his life, that's when Rabbi Yochanan said that Vayeshev Yisrael, when Yaakov is no longer capable because of his old age of moving forward and aspiring to climb and ascend the ladder and reach greater heights, at that point it's Vayikru Yimei Yisrael Lomus, because now he no longer has a connection to She'ifot, to hit Kadmut, but rather to Vayeshev, to remain static and stagnant in the same place. When an active person tries to look for all sorts of opportunities to move forward, then there's no Vayikruvu. But Yaakov got to Mitzrayim, he finally was reunited with his son, who now is the viceroy of Egypt. Yaakov is now being granted life of honor and dignity. He begins to feel the menucha and the nachla. He begins to feel it's time to relax, time to take it easy. All my tzaras in life are in the past. And therefore, Rabbi Yochanan says that what Yaakov Avinu was trying to do is to take a break, a station, and say that at this point in his life, Vayeshev is then, it's not going to be good. It means you're signing off that basically your life is over. And that's Vayikruvu Yimei Yisrael Lomus. Same thing happened at the time of Mechiras Yosef. Yaakov thought that perhaps he has reached a certain station in his life. He could take a break. He could stop. Everything is going well. He finally overcame all the problems of Esav and Lavan and even the Mais and Shechem. Now it's time. Vayeshev Yaakov Leishev B'Shalva. B'Kofatz Olav Rogzo Shel Yosef. Oh no, there's no room for Tachanot, HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells you. The Mitzius, the reality of the world, is that it's full of challenges. It's one unbroken, continuous chain of challenges. It's Harkava Mizugit. And there's no room for taking a break, for taking a Tachana. Let's go on to Vayeshev Yisrael B'Shitim. In Parshas Balak, we have a seduction of Klal Yisrael. How did they succeed in seducing them? And the answer is because the Jews got to the state of Vayeshev Yisrael, of Shananut. Shananut means when you're very calm and very collected, very secure in your place. The people thought that they finally reached the highest level. Now they are free from all the shackles of their adversaries. Now they can be in a static place and not move. And therefore, Hechel is Nos. That's going to be the beginning of the downfall. Vayeshev Yehuda, the Jewish people sat ish tachas gafno v'tachas te'eno. The Jewish people felt that they had already exhausted all the possible achievements in life. They got them all. You know, they get an Aleph plus for every one of their achievements. And at that point, the Pasuk says that they faced the adversaries against Shlomo HaMelech. The language of yeshiva is the same as ish tachas gafno tachas te'eno. And we'll find in many other prophecies in the Tanakh that this sense of security, of being calm, I've reached the level and now I can take it easy, that's indicative of the Vayeshev mentality, of the ish tachas gafno mentality. The Zohar says on the Pasuk V'igiu, Shonim Ashel Tomar Lahem Ein Li Bohem Chafetz. Only in Yemos HaMashiach, says the Zohar, can a person say to himself, I don't have to develop, I don't have to grow, I don't have to aspire, I've reached a tremendous level, I can give myself a pat on the back, and now I know that it's time to enjoy the Yemos HaMashiach. That's the period of time in which it says that Yisrael yuchlu lishkon ish tachas gafno ish tachas teino. Until the Mashiach comes, there's no lishkon, there's no yeshev, yeshiva. It's always going to be move on. No tachas gafno, no tachas teino. Hem yuchlu lihenos me'asegim she'igilem at the time of Mashiach. That's when they can enjoy and feel a sense of pleasure and pride from whatever they achieve. But b'imei Shlomo, in the times of Shlomo, this is way before the Mashiach, is Shlomo said, oh, maybe it's time for ishtachas gafno, ishtachas te'eno, and the answer is no, the Mashiach is not here yet. And until he comes, there's no ishtachas gafno, ishtachas te'eno. It's got to be constant movement, constant growth, and striving. That's called hitkadmut. And that means we need a shifa lehitkadmut. So I just want to end the shiur with a tefillah and a prayer. It should be an ilui neshama. My Rebbe, Rav Moshe Shapiro, passed away last night. And he was a man who really embodied this lesson. He was always on the move. He was a reshiva here. He was my reshiva in a yeshiva called Beis HaTalmud for 2 years here in Yerushalayim. He was a rosh yeshiva in America, in Connecticut. He came back to Eretz Yisrael. He became the spiritual guide of Or Sameach Yeshiva. And he did so much for his Talmidim to instill in them a love for Torah, whether it's Lamdus or whether it's Hashkafa, Musar, Machshava. In Machshava he was unsurpassed. But to the point to which that Rav Hutna, when he came to Eretz Yisrael, and Rav Hutna was a great Baal Machshava, he wrote to Pachad Yitzchak, he desired and strove to have a chavrusa with Rav Moshe. They say they learned together in the middle of the night, and they were learning all sorts of insights into the secrets of the Torah. So may it be an aliyas neshama for him and for all of us. The tefillah, the prayer that we have on our lips, is that we should always be striving to achieve more and more. You know, you're as old as you, and not as it says on your birth certificate, you're as old as your kochos and your energies. And a person can be 50 years old and he's old. A person could be 80 and 90 and he's young, because he still has she'ifot, he has aspirations. And we should all, in Mirtz Hashem, follow in the footsteps of our great giants and never, chas v'shalom, get to a vayeshev. We should always be mahalchim and face all the challenges, like Rabbi Yochanan did, with a sense of simcha to move forward. Kein yiratzon.
What it says at the end of last week's sefer, Yaakov's vayeshev, he was 130, is that right?
Right, 130.
So he sat for 17 years. Well,
so the question is,
I mean, you know, he could have said the Torah could have said he died the next year,
right? So that's on the one end your question still remains good, but on the other end we have an answer to another question. Why did the Torah skip over this entire period of time in 70 years, saying by Yikru Yimei Yisrael Lavo? So you're right, chronologically it's not really Vayeshev and then he died. There were 17 years,
right, which he had Menucha,
and he had, well,
didn't he? I thought the first 17 years, the last 17 years, that was his Vayechi, his Gematria,
yeah,
34.
He had Menucha, but again, you know, there are two approaches to that 17-year period, which we could talk about, and why the number 17 appears both at the beginning and at the end. I'm going to rush this Levaya right now.
Sorry.
Rabbi Meyer's already left because he wanted to be there on time. I wanted to teach a little Chumash, and he's right and I'm wrong, maybe, I don't know. I don't want to be taught on the Chumash class that we had, but I do want to move. But again, according to this Rabbi Yochanan, the fact that the Torah pushed up the Vayikravu means that to some extent Yaakov was at a kind of a station in his life, and that's the Vayeshev that's objectionable. And we saw this Vayeshev back in Parshas Vayeshev as well.
Let me see this.
Yeah, thanks.